Nundini did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across London as you listen. This is their story. In Ealing Central and Acton, qualified people who want to become nurses face years of delay while hospital wards run short-staffed and patients wait longer for care. The training places exist, the people exist, but Treasury spending rules treat each new nurse as a burden on the budget rather than the solution to chronic understaffing.
My name is Nundini. I'm 28, and I live in Ealing Central and Acton. I grew up in Southall in a family of teachers, but nursing called to me early. When my grandmother was ill for months before she died, I watched the nurses who cared for her. Not just the medical tasks, but the way they listened, the way they knew exactly when someone was scared and needed reassurance. I wanted to be that person for other families. I have a rescue cat named Biscuit who's become my practice audience for patient communication skills. She's very patient when I explain procedures to her. I applied to nursing degree programs in 2019, straight after finishing my undergraduate degree. I had good grades, solid experience volunteering at a local care home, and references that I was proud of. King's College London was my first choice. The response came back quickly. They had received over 800 applications from qualified candidates, but government funding caps meant they could only offer 150 places. 800 people who wanted to be nurses, 150 places. The rest of us would have to try again next year. I didn't want to wait a year doing nothing, so I got a job as a healthcare assistant at Ealing Hospital. I thought this would strengthen my application and let me learn while I prepared to reapply. Night shifts, mostly. I saw the wards running short-staffed, nurses covering twice as many patients as they should, exhausted doctors making mistakes because there weren't enough hands. Every shift reinforced why I wanted to do this work. In 2021, I applied again. This time, Health Education England told me directly, "The training budget has been frozen by HM Treasury." The woman on the phone was apologetic but clear. "We know there are 40,000 nursing vacancies across NHS England, but we cannot afford to run more training programmes." She said it like it was a fact of nature, like saying the tide comes in twice a day. At first, this sounded reasonable to me. Budgets are budgets. Money has to come from somewhere. I went back to my night shifts, saved what I could, and reapplied the next year. And the year after that? 2 years of night shifts, watching the same understaffed wards struggle with the same problems while I waited for permission to train to fix them. In 2023, I finally got accepted to a nursing program at Imperial College. I was thrilled. 3 years of applications, 3 years of being told there wasn't room, and now I was in. I started the classroom work, learned anatomy and pharmacology, practiced taking blood pressure on my classmates. When it came time for clinical placements, that's when I met the next wall. The training coordinator at Central and Northwest London NHS Foundation Trust walked me through the building where I was supposed to do my placement. Half the clinical placement slots were sitting empty, not because they couldn't find students, but because the trust couldn't afford to pay the supervision costs for the placements they already had. "There is no funding," she told me, using almost the exact same words I'd heard from King's College and Health Education England. She showed me through unused simulation labs, fully equipped with hospital beds, monitoring equipment, everything you'd need to train someone properly. All locked. Rooms full of equipment gathering dust while students like me waited months for a placement slot to open up. She explained that the Treasury had capped Health Education England's budget at levels that treated each new nurse as a cost to be minimised, rather than someone who would fill the desperate staffing gaps I saw every shift. That's when the contradiction hit me. I was standing in a building full of training equipment that nobody was allowed to use, talking to a coordinator who wanted to run more placements but wasn't allowed to, in a trust that was desperate for nurses, in a system with 40,000 nursing vacancies. The people existed. I was one of them, standing right there. The equipment existed. I was looking at it. The need existed. I saw it every night on the wards. So what exactly was it that there was no money for? The government that issues the pound chose not to spend the pounds that would connect these people to this work. That wasn't an accounting problem. That was a political decision dressed up as an accounting problem. I started to think about what I'd been told over and over. We cannot afford more nurses. But afford them with what? The UK government doesn't have to find pounds under the sofa cushions before it spends them. It issues pounds. The real question wasn't whether enough pounds existed. The real question was whether enough people existed who wanted to be nurses. Whether enough training facilities existed to teach them. Whether enough hospital wards existed that needed them. Standing in that locked simulation lab, I could see that all of these things existed. The only thing that didn't exist was the political will to spend the money that would connect them. I'm still in the nursing program now. I got my clinical placement eventually, after a 6-month delay that pushed back my graduation date. I'm still working night shifts to pay my expenses. I'm still watching wards run understaffed while qualified people wait years for training places and training facilities sit empty. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says, we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. What happened to me wasn't bad luck or unfortunate timing. It was the result of a series of political choices made by people who had alternatives. They chose to treat public investment as a burden, rather than as the means by which trained nurses reach the wards that need them. That choice has a cost. Every patient who waits longer for care, every nurse who burns out covering too many patients, every person like me who spends years wanting to help but being told the cupboard is bare. I know my story isn't unique. It's the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says there isn't enough money to connect them. The money isn't the constraint, the willingness to spend it is.
What Nundini experienced has a name: fake experts. This technique relies on citing authorities who treat government budgets like household budgets, as though repeating the analogy makes it true. Think of how tobacco companies used to cite doctors who claimed smoking was healthy, or how pharmaceutical companies cite researchers who downplay side effects. The credentials look impressive, but the underlying analysis serves a predetermined conclusion. In Nundini's story, every official who said there is no funding was applying household logic to a currency issuer. King's College cited government funding caps, Health Education England cited treasury freezes, NHS trust coordinators cited budget constraints. Each spoke with authority, each treated the household analogy as self-evident truth. The objection often takes this form. Economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation. But which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, does, not currency. Economists say, without naming them, is an appeal to unnamed authority. The UK government issues its own currency. When Nundini stood in those locked simulation labs surrounded by unused training equipment, the constraint wasn't financial. The real constraint is resources. People, skills, materials, time. And in Ealing Central and Acton, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Ealing Central and Acton ranks 195 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025 MHCLG. The constituency has 997 registered charities, Charity Commission Register. Local organisations received £48 million in total grants, 360 giving grant NAV. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.